Hi guys, and welcome to another episode of The Moonalogues. Hello world, hello change. Do you like drinking coffee? I'm a bit of a, I would not say coffee addict, but I do like a cup of coffee in the mornings. And if it's a very busy day, then I need more than one cup of coffee. If you are a happy coffee drinker, then this episode is for you. We'll talk a lot of coffee, as I've done in this introduction. The stories we're going to listen to or that I share with you today take us to Italy, to Naples, and to Germany, to Berlin. And let's discover what the secret is to connecting through coffee. So let's do this. It's the 10th episode of the Moonalogues, and so far we've heard stories from all continents. Stories where people meet and support each other, no matter their religion, race, class, gender, or age. More often than not, we tend to categorize people according to these five issues, form beliefs about them without actually meeting the other person. It's so easy to get stuck in our own way of thinking that we forget that the so-called other is another human being with emotions, desires, and wishes, not so much different at all to our own. Seeing the human connection in another person who believes in a different God, belongs to a different ethnicity or race, or simply lives a life different from yourself is not always easy, but I think it's essential, for no one likes to be excluded. No one likes to feel left out. Sun Sheng Chen, Kipling D. Williams, and Julie Finesse are authors of a study on social and physical pain, and they have found that social pain, for example caused by not belonging to a group, is as strong as if not stronger than suffering from a serious physical injury. So it's no wonder we all want to belong. And yet again, it seems so much easier to exclude people than building bridges across social divides. One of these social divides is money. If you have it, you can afford to buy things and participate in everything that society has to offer. If you don't have any, even going out for a cup of coffee is impossible. The South Italian city Naples is one place that has found a way to bridging this social divide. The practice is called caffè sospeso, and it's a long-standing Napolitan tradition. Once upon a time in Naples, in the Sanita district, when a person was happy because something had gone well for him, instead of just paying for one coffee at the bar, he paid for two and left the second coffee, the one already paid for the next customer. This gesture was known as the pending coffee, or caffè sospeso. Then, every so often, a poor person passed by and asked if there was a pending coffee. It was just another way to offer a coffee to humanity. So the legend goes. When and how this tradition of caffè sospeso was started remains one of history's secrets. Some say it goes back to the late 1800s. It's a tradition handed down orally by grandparents and parents, says Sergio Arturo, one of the owners of the Gran Caffè Gambrinos. The Gran Caffè Gambrinos is an elegant cafe, and for its 150th birthday celebration back in 2010, the owners decided to revive the tradition of the caffè sospeso. Some say nobles shared the joy of having won a game of horse jousting or having met a beautiful young lady by going to coffee shops and paying for two coffees, one for themselves and one for a stranger, says Sergio Arturo with a smile glinting in his eyes. Others believe that this custom came about in one of the most difficult moments in history of Italy, the Second World War. During the years of conflict, certain luxuries such as coffee were difficult to get hold of, and human solidarity manifested in this way, creating a virtuous circle. But no matter when and how it started, the tradition is alive again, for it's such a simple way to bridge the gap that is created by class and money. And everyone who can afford it joins in. You simply go into a cafe bar, order an espresso for yourself and your friend, and three more, for instance. You'll have two espressi to drink right now and ask the waiter to keep the other three coffees pending. You drink your coffee and enjoy a chat with your friend, which in Italy is usually part of a quick break or say around 15 minutes of chatting and not necessarily combined with sitting down and talking for hours in a cafe like in other countries. And once you've finished your espresso, you're on your way again. The three other espressi are left waiting until someone comes along and asks, C'è un caffè sospeso? Is there a coffee pending? Caffè sospeso is the first step of solidarity to those who don't get a chance to have coffee, says Pino De Stasio, the owner of Bar Siete Bello, a coffee shop along the Via Benetto Croce in the historic center of Naples. It is the symbol of a network of solidarity between citizens who can afford it and those who need it, like the homeless or underprivileged immigrants. A group of coffee shops across the city now belongs to the Suspended Coffee Network, with a day of celebration marked out for each year on December 10th. The movement has come to embody a spirit of solidarity. During the first lockdown from March to May 2020, the tradition widened and included left pizza, pasta, and sweets for doctors, nurses, and COVID patients. It then grew into the concept of suspended baskets, where poorer residents would leave baskets hanging from their homes in the hope of food being left by kind strangers. This solidarity concept followed a simple guiding phrase: those who can, leave food. Those who can't, take. Solidarity took other forms, from buying books for readers who cannot otherwise afford them, or the famous pizzeria, the Cinciatina ai Tre Santi, that started to give out pizza sospeso. Be it pizza, books, or caffè sospeso, it's a way to include those who have less. It's a way to share and be part of society and feel supported in times of need. It's a way of being included in a region that has seen its share of economic hardships. It's a beautiful gesture, says Anna Gass, owner of Bar Nilo, which is also a hub for Caffè Sospeso. It says a lot about the Neapolitans. We take care of each other. Taking care of someone else comes in all kinds of forms and shapes. In Germany, they don't have any tradition that compares to Caffè Sospeso, but they are also avid coffee drinkers. However, not everyone is welcome in the cafes, for the coffee drinking culture differs to the one in Italy. In Germany, meeting someone for a cup of coffee usually lasts for at least an hour. Another reason why Caffè Sospeso doesn't exist, though there were attempts to introduce the tradition, might lie in the belief that fixed structures provided by the government, charities, and small organizations will take care of those in need. At least, that's what I thought, until I met Klaus. Klaus used to be homeless here in Berlin. I meet Klaus through Querstadt Ein, a small German NGO that encourages you to see the city through the eyes of homeless people. I've booked an alternative city tour with Querstadt Ein, and Klaus is my tour guide. I'm going to spend 2 hours with him, during which he shows me the city as he experienced it as a homeless person, and so I get a glimpse into his world. For years, Klaus was one of the 10,000 homeless people in Berlin who literally call the streets their home. There's a difference between unsheltered homeless people and sheltered homeless people. Sheltered people have no fixed abode and find a place to sleep by crashing with acquaintances and friends or in emergency shelters. Unsheltered homeless people sleep on the streets. The German government estimates that there are more than 50,000 unsheltered homeless people. When we count people who are sheltered homeless, the numbers climb into the 800,000s. There are no official statistics, because how would you count those who don't want to be seen? Anyone who wanders the streets of the capital, even and especially in COVID times, can see homeless people, but usually only when they no longer mind being seen. Some even want to be seen. Not Klaus, though. I wanted to be a grey mouse, didn't want to be seen, he shrugs. He is a small, gaunt man. If I had to guess his age, I'd say he must be in his early 60s. It's impossible to say for sure. The alcoholism has left its marks on his face, and his round shoulders could make him look older than he actually is. Klaus lived on the streets for 7 years. Sometimes he slept in the Tiergarten, the large park in the middle of the city. Sometimes on the Charité hospital grounds in the part of town called Mitte. He washed himself and his clothes at a facility of the Franciscan Church in the north of Berlin. He did everything to hide, everything to remain invisible. Over the years, Klaus developed a fixed routine. Having been in the military of the former East German state GDR helped him, he says. Emergency shelters were not his cup of tea. Apart from the close proximity to others and people who were in his eyes even worse off than him, there is an absolute ban on drugs. Not everyone adheres to this ban, and Klaus didn't want to either. After all, alcohol was the one thing that kept him going. Klaus was a loner on the streets, and being alone also provided security. If there's only one drop of wine left in the bottle, it's all alcoholics for themselves, he explains. You fight for the last drop if you're addicted. It's as simple as that. Klaus takes me through Stadtmitte, past the Gendarmenmarkt, a central square in Berlin surrounded by expensive hotels and restaurants. The Gendarmenmarkt has one of the most popular Christmas markets. Just thinking about Christmas and winter makes me wonder how to survive as a homeless person in the cold. Aren't winters especially hard? I ask him. Summers are worse, Klaus replies. In winter, you notice when something freezes off. In summer, you have all the bugs, fleas and stuff. And they nest under your skin when you sleep on the floor. So you have to put space between you and the floor. Having learned his lesson to protect himself from creepy crawlies, Klaus tells me he started to look for a safe spot to sleep in summer. He takes me to a playhouse at a playground in Niederwaldstraße near the German Ministry of Foreign Affairs. I couldn't believe my luck that it hadn't been taken by someone else, he says. For the playhouse offers protection from wind and rain, but also from the unbeloved creepy crawlies. The catch? The playground is surrounded by residential buildings. How could he remain undetected? Klaus arranged his daily routine accordingly. His day began summer and winter before everyone else's. In summer, he needed to get up before sunrise. In winter, as soon as the first light went on in the houses. That's when I knew I had to get out of there. I didn't want anyone to see me. To remain invisible, to not be recognized as someone who has no place to stay, was crucial to him. He didn't want people to know that he had somehow fallen through the system. He didn't want people to know that he was addicted to alcohol. And perhaps more than anything, he didn't want anyone to know that he didn't want to get a hang of his addiction either. It was important not to be discovered and not to bother anyone else. He didn't want to lose his sleeping spot. One early morning on a summer's day, Klaus tells me he got up with daybreak, quickly changed into his day clothes, packed up his few belongings to put them away in a secret storing place, when suddenly he got a visitor. Standing in front of him is a 10-year-old girl. Who are you? Ich bin Klaus. I'm Klaus, he replies in the typical Berlin dialect. Even years later, when Klaus recounts this first encounter with the girl, his nature changes. It's as if even today he can't believe his luck of being surprised like this at such an early hour. Do you want to have breakfast with me? The little girl points to a small basket of food and plates and cutlery. Klaus agrees. So the homeless man and the young girl have an early hour picnic at the playground in Mitte. Klaus is grateful for the food because he usually manages to get by collecting deposit bottles. However, the choice of meals is rather limited for him usually. After all, there must always be enough money left to buy booze. He thanks the little girl and wants to hide his things for the day. But the little girl says, "Now you have to come to my mom's. She wants to meet you." Klaus says he really didn't like the idea of having to introduce himself to the child's mother. But something in him couldn't say no either. He quickly hides his belongings in the secret storage spot and then follows the young girl to meet her mother. Maria was her name, and she was heavily pregnant, Klaus remembers. I've been watching you for quite a while. You've been on my list for some time coming, Maria tells the surprised man. You're going to have lunch with us on Sunday. You can't reek of alcohol. That's all I'm asking. Maria had already noticed Klaus, despite his best efforts to remain invisible to a society he felt no longer cared for him. There was something about Maria and her daughter that made Klaus accept the offer, and right on that dot, at 12 o'clock the next Sunday, he rang their doorbell. He didn't smell of booze. Because when to drink and how to drink so that you don't reek of booze, that's one of the skills of a good alcoholic, Klaus explains. After that first day, Sunday lunch became a fixed ritual in Klaus's life. During the week, he would continue his routine, collect deposit bottles, take care of his wash, get drunk, and visit Maria and the family on Sundays. Because that's what Maria, her husband, and their kids soon became to him. Family. He was part of their family on Sundays. He phoned them when he couldn't make it, for the family from Niederwaldstraße had given him a mobile phone so that he could check in with them. He was supposed to call them during the week. They took him with him on family outings to Wannsee, a large lake just at the outskirts of the city. There were no conditions or obligations. Klaus was just not allowed to be drunk or reek of alcohol. This loose friendship lasted a long time, but did not persuade Klaus to give up his home, the streets of the city. Because getting off the streets would also have meant giving up alcohol. But it was as if giving up the life on the streets wasn't up to me anymore. Somehow life had conspired against me, he shares matter-of-factly. A good friend of mine who lived in a small flat had arranged it with a landlord that I could move in with him and stay there for the winter. It was a done deal. All I had to do was say yes. Klaus accepted the offer, but his good friend had another surprise in store for him. And then you can give up the booze. I got sober myself, so you can do it too. Encouraged by his buddy, Klaus took the first step and turned to social workers in the neighborhood. The next steps were more difficult, because Klaus was still convinced that he had his alcoholism under control. Maria, on the other hand, disagreed. Either you get sober or we part ways. I can't go on like this. Klaus's social worker was also present during this visit to his adoptive family. She burst out laughing, Klaus recalls, and the memory makes him smile today. It was immediately clear to her that Maria had me by the short hairs. I suddenly had something to lose. Klaus had become visible. There were people who cared for him, and what was even more important, Maria and her family mattered to him. There were people who were suddenly more important than alcohol, Klaus says, and he's shaking his head slightly as if he still can't quite believe it. And so he took the next steps, thanks to his self-discipline, which he had not lost during all those years on the street. While other alcoholics arrive at rehab facilities in the dark and in a drunken stupor, I was there at 8 o'clock in the morning. That's what Maria had said. Be on time, clean, and without a whiff of alcohol. That helped. The will to change himself and his situation became visible, also on the outside. Klaus was admitted to a rehab clinic, given one of only two single rooms in the facility, and started therapy. Now I know that alcoholism is a disease, he says. He is still friends with Maria and her family. The little girl who came to see him for breakfast in the playhouse at the playground more than 10 years ago now is studying at university. Law, Klaus tells me proudly. After more than 2 hours, the tour with Klaus Seilwinder ends. He could tell me more. He's happy about the questions, the interest in him and his story. Because visibility does something to a person, especially when you can be seen and accepted as who you are, and don't need to hide, don't have to pretend, but simply can be. And so it doesn't really matter how we do it, via a revived tradition that comes with a cup of coffee or any other way. I firmly believe that life is not about our own little selves. It's about becoming aware and conscious both of what goes on within us as much as in others. As individuals, we may feel powerless, and yet each and every one of us has the power to be kind to someone else, to reach out and give a helping hand to a stranger. It usually doesn't cost anything, just a little effort, and it can have a life-changing effect on someone else. Or to say it in the words of Italian writer Luciano di Crescenzo, when for some reason a Napolitan decides to offer a coffee to a stranger, it is like offering a coffee to the rest of the world.